Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my wild country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
This was never about money for us. It was about us against the system. That system that kills the human spirit. We stand for something.
With Dusty Hera.
I've had the old bull, now I want the young calf.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
Play action for Mark Bulger, firing into the end zone. Cam Cleland's got it! Touchdown Rams! With 2:11 to play, a 17-yard connection. Mark Bulger to Cam Cleland.
On 1080 The Fan.
Hour number three, Dusty and Cam in the Morning. Thank you for being part of our morning, letting us be a part of yours. Got a lot of name talk going on the fan text line, 503-250-1080.
What do you mean, name calling? What do you mean, name calling?
No,
name
we were
calling?
Talking, no, what?
No. Names, oh, name talk. I thought like you said, Doug, okay. Will, Billy,
yeah.
All that.
Oh,
yeah, we had okay. A lot of that earlier in the show. Buck was just reading some more texts on what we had. As far as our Bill's Billy's Bill that now goes by Walter.
There was name calling going on. Oh, shame on you. Shame on me.
Mm. Yeah. Well, yeah. Shame on you. Shame on me. No way. We got World Series tonight. Game one down in Arlington. The two number one seeds going at it. And boy, they couldn't be number one seeds from a further apart, as you have the Dodgers with their massive payroll against the Tampa Rays, which have their minuscule payroll. But there's no doubt about it. This pitching matchup tonight of Tyler Glasnow versus Clayton Kershaw, you've got two bona fide aces on the mound. One has everything to prove, and the other is playing with house money.
Well, you ask yourself right now, just who would you want to have the ball in their hands? Right now, you're not just, okay, you're the manager, you're going into this game. Okay, you're the number two hitter. What, it doesn't even really matter. You're on either side of the coin here, and you're looking at this going, all right, this is the World Series. I have two guys to pick from. I don't want to put the ball in their hand. Will Dave Roberts do the old, hey, let's, maybe we start a middle reliever in the first inning and then let Clayton Kershaw start, you know, that little fun little game that he likes to play. No, he's going to give it right away, but I'm straight up honest here. I'm going with Glasgow. That's who I want.
Too. That and is it who should I be want. Kershaw, but it's not.
That's the disappointing side of this. Isn't a broken narrative over and over again. What is the reason Clayton Kershaw cannot get over? Hasn't. I'm not saying he cannot. Maybe this is the year. Maybe as a Mariner fan, we always say maybe. We live in the maybe world. Dodgers fans live in the, can you please just get it done? Who are you picking?
I'm picking Glasnow.
Why are we all picking Glasnow?
Because, well, he's thrown the...
Because of Clayton,
he's got no
Clayton
experience,
Kershaw's
though.
5 ERA in the postseason.
He's got no experience in the postseason.
We've seen Kershaw. We've seen him in the postseason. We haven't seen him in the World Series. Without, and this World Series is different. You're not playing in a... You're not going to Dodger Stadium where it would be rocking in Chavez Ravine.
Wait, do you see how many Dodger fans drove and flew to Texas?
Well, it won't be more than 11,000. I know
that's a good point.
So you have a neutral site, a site where it's okay. You're you're in basically an empty stadium, only 11,000 people in there. It won't have that pressure or that gravity that it would normally have. And Glasnow's just been a better pitcher, period, this year.
So I mean, confidence out of the game. So the experience of Clayton Kershaw carries no weight when it comes to making the decision of whether you think he has the ability to man up or game up. Because that, to me, sounds like Clayton Kershaw is not a gamer.
No, I'm just saying, no, Glasnow's a better pitcher this year. Like, he is. He is thrown.
But is he a gamer? Is he a gamer when you need someone to give you six and a third? Because that's really what you're asking Clayton Kershaw. Because in his last start, his offense was brutal. They didn't help him at all.
The defense didn't help him either.
If you gave Clayton Kershaw, five runs. If you gave him five runs, how good would he be? Would he be better?
Yes. The thing with Kershaw is that if you give him five runs, he finds a way to give up six. And that's what he's done in like every playoff.
So he relaxes then.
When his team scores, he finds a way to just give up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody that's watched Clayton Kershaw a lot, Ryan, because you've been in that NL West and get to see it, is this just a stereotypical kind of pitcher that's a great regular season pitcher and can't find a way to man up when it comes to making a big play?
I don't know if I can point to...
I use Madison Bumgarner as an example.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't think I can... I mean, I can't point to his like psyche, but clearly when you just put it side by side, he's way better in the regular season than he is in the postseason. Yep. I don't know why. I don't know if his motion is too taxing. He's too tired by the end of the year. I don't know if it's a mental thing. I don't know if it's both.
I think there is a bit of that physically. He is not the same pitcher because you see that there's that postseason jump. Like they get that little juice because there's more adrenaline in the postseason, and his is relatively the same.
This might not go over well. I think he's a good guy. I think he is. I'm using Madison Bumgarner as an example because I think it's a completely fair comparison. Both of them are Hall of Fame pitchers. One single-handedly won a World Series by pitching three games and kicking everyone's ass. Because when he steps on the mound, you know who has the ball. When Clayton Kershaw steps on the mound, it's like somebody's dad is throwing BP. Oh, it's Clayton. When Madison Bumgarner steps on the mound, it's like, that dude is on the mound. He's soft. I'm just call it what it is. Soft in the moments when you need him to be tough. Is that not fair?
No, but I that's totally. I think that is fair at this point. At this point, I think that it's fair. But at the same time, like Madison Bumgarner, comparing him to Madison Bumgarner is
it's a fair comparison.
I think no, because exceptions don't prove rules. And this guy, Madison Bumgarner, is exceptional in the postseason, and. You know, Clayton Kershaw is unexceptional in the postseason. And
but that's
I think
why
that we
I compare
see
the two.
Most of the guys that you see in postseason baseball are either an amped up version of themselves or they are more, it is what that guy is in the regular season,
so
more or less.
Maybe you're
and
missing
Kershaw
the comparison.
Kershaw is at this point, you got to say, dude doesn't have whatever it is that it takes to get in between the ears to do it in the postseason.
Well, then that's
you're
why
right.
I compare him to Madison Bumgarner, because you're talking about a lefty, an older veteran, tons of experience, a guy that's been to multiple World Series, and when the light is shined on you, when everybody's looking at you to make a play, can you make a play or not? That is as fair a comparison as you can ever find, not only within your division, in your own era of a player. And you just look at the separation.
Freak, though. He is a
Madison Bumgarner is a freak?
Yes.
He's 6'4", he throws 91.
I know, in the postseason, pitching three games in a World Series.
But if we're looking at metrics, size, speed, ability, strength, pitching ability, all the things are exactly the same. They're not hard throwers. They're accurate throwers. They're not guys that are going to get you out with 97, 98, 99. They're going to get you out with their best pitch, the slider, okay, cutter, good curveball, all the things. What's the damn difference? One guy is soft, one guy is tough. That's it.
You know
Game
what,
over.
You know what Glasnow has on Kershaw, too, is he's got power, and he has a big bender. He threw the fastest ball in the postseason this year?
What did he
Tyler Glasnow.
Was it 102?
101.4. Faster than Aroldis Chapman.
Pure cheese. Oh.
Faster than anybody else in this postseason. 101.4. And he is top 10 in all of Major League Baseball with the break on his curveballs.
Think about that.
Yeah.
This text has no problem with Kershaw going in game 1, 2, or 3, but I cringe at him pitching in games 5, 6, or 7. See the results against the Nationals, Red Sox, and Astros. He's good early, bad late.
Sorry, I got freaking fan guy right outside my blower guy right here. Can you not hear that?
No, I can hear it.
Yeah,
but it's like, that
sorry,
is,
everybody. We got.
You do not big up. Want I can't hear anything. Clayton Kershaw in Game 7, which is surprising to me. Like, wouldn't that lead with Dave Roberts? You know, you're going to have to pitch him in a clutch situation for you.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go with the guy on short rest, you're going to have him pitch in
this
a Game 7 pitch.
This is the defining moment for the Dodgers and Clayton Kershaw. You're never going to... If he wants to take this thing and just say, okay, shut them all up, do everything you can, I personally would love to see Kershaw win this game and get off on a great start. I really would. Because he's such a great man, and he's somebody you love, you appreciate, you can admire. I just want to see it. I'd love for him to get over that hump. It's kind of like when David Price did it. You know, David Price couldn't get it done. Paid him all that money. Okay, he found the Red Sox, and maybe they cheated, but I don't know. I don't have enough. But David Price even found a way to step up in the playoffs and did it for the Red Sox. I don't know what the Red Sox were doing. They were cheating too. They were doing signs with their Apple Watches. But David Price did not cheat. He just stepped up and threw balls in the mound. He pitched well. Pitchers can't cheat. They can't cheat like Gaylord Perry used to and throw a big spitball.
Sure they can.
Well, they can't do it like they used to, man. They used to have emery boards.
Hey, that's one of Trevor Bauer's big things is he doesn't know what they're doing, but he thinks the Astros are cheating because of spin rate and their spin rates.
So what do they have, thumbtacks?
I don't know.
Taped to the end of their Band-Aids?
He said he doesn't know what he thinks they're doing, but
so
everybody's
spin
rate.
Are they putting Crisco? Is this like, is this Ed?
I don't know. Apparently everybody's spin rate goes up when you go to Houston. Because I don't know, maybe they track it. That's one of Trevor Bauer's conspiracies. So maybe that happened with David Price too. I don't know.
But at least that's when you get a chance. How many more chances is Clayton Kershaw going to get before you just give up on him? Tonight's the night.
We're going to find out. And he's got a red hot team that he's facing, including, Arruzarena for the Tampa Bay Rays, who's a rookie on
fire. He's on fire.
503-250-1080. We'll have World Series picks at the end of the show. We'll get some of yours on the text line. But coming up next, how do you fix the Cowboys? Dustin Cam on the Fan.
With sword and pistol by my side, many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade.
Dallas Cowboys are not a good football team. They just aren't. They're not a good team right now. They got manhandled last night by the Arizona Cardinals, 38-10. And didn't score till late in the game. You have everywhere from injuries causing this team to be bad to, Dak Prescott, their offensive line. You have Ezekiel Elliott, one of your highest paid players, is fumbling the ball all over the field. You've got contract negotiations that haven't gone well with your quarterback, and he's on the franchise tag and on the IR for the season. Now you're looking at Andy Dalton. And then you have coaching miscues and mistakes. Like, why in the world did Mike McCarthy try to kick a 58-yard field goal when you're down 28-3?
Trying to score points.
Well,
it was the end of the half, right?
Why? No, it was in the third quarter. You're getting hammered.
Oh, I know. No. Yeah.
You're getting absolutely hammered, and he lines up for a 58-yard field goal.
Because his kicker and probably his special teams coach went over and said, yeah, it's in his range. He said, all right, let's go. 2 points. I don't know.
They missed it.
You want him to punt? He's down. You want him to punt?
No.
Go for it. Fake it? Maybe. I don't know.
Go for it. You're in a position where what are you going to lose right now? You've already threw
Tuesday morning quarterbacks. Let's go. Why not?
You already threw a pick to start the half, and they went down and scored to make it 28-3. And you're sitting there looking at your watch going, time's ticking away, and we don't have enough time, so I'm going to kick a 58-yard field goal? I was like, that didn't do them any. So you would have gone for it there. Probably would have gone for it.
And then you shorten the field for a potential because of the score. So
you miss a 58-yard field goal.
And then you shorten the field anyway. So you're damned. You are damned if you don't.
Exactly.
Yeah. Probably.
Exactly. And that's why you go for it down 28-3 there. And so, I mean, there was kind of some of the head scratching things that we saw. From a coaching standpoint, though, I don't think Mike McCarthy is to blame here for what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys. But how do you fix them?
This text says, how do you fix the Cowboys? You take Jerry Jones, send him off to some private island somewhere for the rest of the year so that he can't make any more decisions. You sign some free agents that will actually help the defense, and you tell Andy Dalton that if he throws one more interception, he's released, and they sign Colin Kaepernick.
Wow, that's pretty detailed.
lot going on there.
Lot. I don't know if that can be accomplished in this decade, but okay. Because you're not getting Jerry Jones to step away. What's a real, come on, Cowboy fan out there?
No.
Let's stop asking Jerry Jones to step away. He's a great man. He's an awesome leader. I said this at the beginning of the show, and I'll reiterate this again. The experience of being around Jerry, he is captivating. He is loyal. He is honest. He takes care of you better than any owner in the entire league. And I'm not kidding you. He does everything for you. He's like a dad. He's so supportive. He gives you from top of the line, first class, everything from meals, travel, wives, kids. Everything that he does for the adoration of you as a player and takes care of you. Overpays his talent. Overpays everybody. Gives you everything. So what is the realistic thing you can do to fix the Cowboys? Come on.
No, that is it. Is him stepping away as general manager, though. Be an owner.
That's not realistic.
But hold on. He could do all of those things that you just said and let somebody else make football decisions.
Yeah, unfortunately, I know, but that's not realistic.
Then I don't think there's much that the Cowboys can do, is there?
I think you're right. Yeah.
This text says, must be a Cowboys fan. They say, we have an offensive line full of backups, a ginger at QB, a defensive Swiss cheese.
Dare the dingers!
And an RB that gives the football away like Oprah giving away cars. Mm. Oh, and a coach that was unemployed last year. Somehow we are still in first in the division, so I still have to watch every week, but this is a dumpster fire. That's Herbie and Roy.
Okay, come on, Herbie. Dude, you can't. I'm outraged about your ginger.
I love
hate.
Herbie.
Love you. Don't go after the gingers. Don't you? Yeah.
Look, it is a
Andy Dalton. Yeah. It's got a lot. There's a lot to unpack here.
Look, Dalton wasn't the biggest issue that they had last night. He sure as heck was one of them. But this is where it comes down to one of the problems that Dallas was going to run into. You could see it coming from a mile away is when you had the best offensive line in the NFL, you had to pay either your backs, your skill positions, your defense, or that O-line. They couldn't afford to pay six starting caliber offensive linemen. So you had defections. You had guys leave. You have injuries. And Zach Martin going down yesterday. That's brutal again. So you got this mass unit on the O-line, a mass unit at quarterback. It's a disaster. But as you point out, you're still in first place in the league. And I think that says a lot about, you know, kind of the NFC East as a whole. That whole division sucks.
This one says it's pretty simple. If the coach doesn't have the authority to hire and fire personnel, the players will not listen.
Yeah, because the hierarchy is Jerry is the guy. Nobody looks at everybody that's a head coach since they're figureheads. I know that doesn't sit well in the reality of what it is that even every coach that's been there since, and that's what's really hit hard when you're talking with every coach prior Jimmy Johnson. You try to allow these coaches to be the guys and be the leaders, and no one's buying into it. This is where I think Cowboy fan sits. And this is a tweet from Michael Fabino. And those of you know Michael, I think that's how you say Michael Fabino. He's a senior fantasy analyst for Sports Illustrated. He's formerly of CBS Sports, and he's a diehard Yankees and Cowboys fan. He's a really good follow. He explains it like this. I've been a Cowboys fan since 1991. This is his tweet. There have been ups and downs, more downs in the last 20 years, but the fact remains and will remain. Jerry Jones ain't one poop. Now he had a poop emoji. Without Jimmy Johnson, the Switzer title was JJ's team, and he won't win poop in the near future either. Hashtag soured. That's where you're at. I think you're come to the... to the conclusion that you're never going to get over the hump with Jerry being Jerry. He's Al Davis. Al Davis never gave up power to the bitter end, to when the Crypt Keeper was still alive.
So to bring this thing full circle, I mean, you started the segment off by saying like all the things that Jerry Jones does.
He's an unbelievable
right?
man. He is.
But I mean, he's the reason why they're not going to
I'm not
fixed.
Saying he's the reason. I'm telling the Cowboy fan and the ones that are out there all know, and they're just under this thing, is that this is a pure and simple ego thing. Is that you can't expect a 78-year-old man to stop having ego. That's insane.
So it than it is until he's out of the way of as being a general manager, and I think that's it.
I think as long as he's upright and walking around, this Cowboys organization can't figure out from that perspective of everybody out there can't get out of their own way when it comes to the power.
Maybe they do start relinquishing even more of that power to Stephen Jones because he's given up some.
He has.
And he's admittedly given up
Could
some.
Be.
This text says has a fix that says you can have Zeke carry a football everywhere he goes for the rest of the year. He's cost them in nearly every game with his fumbles.
Like the program. Remember the program scene?
Oh, yeah.
He's carrying it around. Mm-hmm. You pop it out and everyone gets mm-hmm. it. Yeah, Zeke is a huge disappointment this season. I think it's huge. I think when you're asked for the amount of money, you hold out, you force the hand of your owner, threaten everybody, finally get your money, which is fine. I don't get it because Jerry Jones pays you. And then you step up and you don't lead your team by leaning on you. You know, when bad teams have a high-end player and you lose Dak, who's their true leader, your next leader has to step up. Does this tell you a lot about Zeke last night, about who he is and what he is doing? Is that he needs the offensive line? Of course, Barry Sanders and offensive line. How good is the Titans' offensive line?
Really good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Or is Derrick Henry just that good?
Oh, the offensive line's good.
Sure. Did Christian McCaffrey have a great offensive line last year?
No.
No. Heck no. Does Chris Carson have a great offensive line?
Derrick Henry's going to be interesting to follow because, you know, they lost their left tackle.
Right.
Taylor Lewan out for the year with a torn ACL. That is an injury to follow right there.
Mm-hmm.
Is where
Marshawn Lynch never had a great offensive line. Never had hardly any offensive linemen. Never.
Well, the Super Bowl run, weren't they? No. They were really good.
Oh, God. They were average. They're 100% average. Okay. Pro Football Focus, you can go back and look into history of all that. The Seahawks haven't had a good offensive line since Sean Alexander when he had two Pro Bowlers and Hall of Famers along with Robbie Tobeck. And they only ran the left.
Wasn't that Max Unger, James Carpenter, that group?
We're talking about the kind of offensive line that Dallas had. We're talking about perennial Pro Bowlers. Ridiculously good offensive line. And Zeke's going, yeah, man, pay me my money. Well, they paid the highest guard, huge offensive tackle, all those things they overpaid. Jerry takes care of them all.
This text says, you're an idiot if you blame Jerry Jones for this. It's terrible play on the field by their top players. Terrible play isn't a GM problem.
Terrible play is part of the situation, of course. But what is the common denominator for the last, 26 years? What's the common denominator?
Jerry Jones.
If you don't blame leadership for the fault of an organization, who are you? That's like blaming the truck driver for Amazon going bad. That's dumb. You want to talk about idiot? That's idiot.
There's been some issues that I think you can blame Jerry Jones because every single thing has changed about that organization. Every single one. But the fact that you bring in Mike McCarthy and you expect something different, yet he's not even allowed to hire his own offensive coordinator.
Right.
There's where you go. Jerry Jones loves him some Kellen Moore. Mm-hmm. And look, Kellen Moore is a very bright football mind. I mean, he's been like a wonder boy in football since he went yes, out of Prosper to Federal or from Prosper to Boise State, right? And they always just talk about how brilliant Kellen Moore was, right?
Yeah. Okay, all right. And I haven't seen much
but
yet.
Here's the thing is that then as a player, he goes, boom, straight from being a backup to Tony Romo into being the quarterback's coach, right? Yeah, he's always been like, this guy's so smart. But you're right in that I still haven't seen a whole heck of a lot. He's been billed as it.
But Jerry Jones does that. He takes care of you. He's like a dad. He's like, I'm going to elevate you right away. And by the way, Bill Belichick does the same damn thing. Both his sons are on the staff. That's what you do. This isn't new.
Well, Josh McDaniels is like his kid.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
If there is one guy that Bill Belichick loves, it's Josh McDaniels. I mean, he loves.
But Buddy Ryan did the same thing with his boys. That's what you do. Yep. That's how you do it. You're around it. Some turn out great, some don't. But you take it's a buddy-buddy system. This is what you do in the league. You take care of each other. And Jerry Jones takes care of you. He is a great owner. He is.
Rex and Rob Ryan remind me of the rhinoceros and hippos from Ninja Turtle. You remember those guys?
Rocksteady and Bebop.
I wonder what those two dudes were like. How fun those two would have been as brothers watching that
Have
whole
you seen
story.
The graduation photos of them with their mustaches and their cap and gowns?
No.
I can't imagine the parties that they had. Wow.
Well, yeah, because the parties that those guys had, dad was, you know, mom and dad are out of town, you know?
Dad's coaching. Where are we going, Rex?
We're going to rage.
I don't know, Rob. Where do you want to go?
And I imagine there's a lot of
the walls can talk in that house.
In high fives.
Yeah.
Man, I bet there's a lot of holes in those walls.
We're going to need an E60 or whatever.
Mm. Party boys.
Yeah.
Rex and Rob Ryan. Ryan's. All right. More of your texts on this 503-250-1080. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. Here's Buck. Oakley Dunkley, we do have some breaking news in the National Foosball League. How about this, man? We have got Tua Tagovailoa is now the starter for the Miami Dolphins. They head into a bye week, and coming out of the bye, they will face the Rams with Tua as the starter. Ryan Fitzpatrick now on the bench.
And right on cue, Fitzmagic gives you the first month and a week. First month, a little bit of a week, gets you a little bit of a dance. You see the light at the end of the tunnel a little bit, and then here comes the future. Here comes the true leader of what this team's going to be. And it's a great decision because all the rookies are playing well right now. Joe Burrow's playing well. Justin Herbert's playing well. Those guys that were drafted, they're deserved now. And when, you know, Tua got hurt in what week last year? It's got to be just about a year.
Was it November? It was mid-November. November 16th, I believe. It was almost like 11 months to the day when he got back in.
Excited. I think it's great. It's a great decision.
Yeah.
Fitzmagic's not your future. Okay, if you're going to make a run, and here's why I think this made this decision.
Wait, he's not?
No, he's not the future. Oh, here's why I think they made this decision,
lost
guys.
That futures bet.
Okay, there would have been a time when you start, if the Bills win those two previous games, here's what they go. They're like, all right, we don't got a shot. They think they can go after the division. Cam Newton lost. The Patriots are 2-3. The Bills just lost two in a row. The Jets are dreadful. Miami's going down there. I think we can win this division. They don't make that decision. You have to look at this from Brian Flores' point of view. If you're getting your butt kicked or you're not in a situation, you go, we can win this division.
They're already two games behind the Patriots and the Bills in the division because they lost.
But you have to think of it that way. You have to.
They've got a tough stretch coming up. They have three wins. They're 3-3 right now with wins over the Jags, the Niners, and Jets. Okay. Their losses, Patriots, Bills, Seahawks. So, I mean, they got a tough stretch with the Rams, Cardinals, Chargers coming in the next 3 weeks. But look, you're giving yourself a shot. And Tua, we knew Tua was going to be the guy. Do you think Ryan Fitzpatrick would have been as excited for Tua to get in the game if you'd have known that he wasn't going to be starting the next week?
Yes, yes, because Fitzy is that kind of guy. He is that kind of guy. He's a competitor, but he understands. He's 37 years old.
Yeah.
He's been in the league forever. He's made a ton of money. He's there to be a backup. He knew that. He's not the future. Mm-hmm. That's embracing your role, and he's embracing his role. He's not trying to be more than he is. He knows that.
I hope it goes well for Tua, and we'll see kind of what he's made of because he does have a lot to catch up with because Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert have both, their records aren't good, but those two guys have been playing very well for rookies. And so the bar is going to be set pretty high for him as a starter. You know, that may be a little added pressure, but this is a guy who stepped in at the University of Alabama where, you know, as a freshman, there's a little bit of pressure to be exceptional at the University of Alabama, and he did just fine there too. So he's no stranger to pressure. This is going to be he's in the best spot of those three right now as far as the health of the team, though.
If he's a next-level spark that can add, think about the watching last. Let's use the example of last night and watch the way Kyler Murray created plays. You started off the show talking about you have the electric ability of how he can continue to extend drives. He ran a 4-3. He has versatility. He has that kind of baseball mentality, can throw it all over the place like Patrick Mahomes. He throws a great football, pocket awareness, all of that, but extends drives. What's it going to look like if Tua can extend drives and make those extra plays outside the pocket? Can learn to get rid of the football quickly, efficiently.
Yeah.
But he can do things that Ryan Fitzpatrick cannot. And those are the things you're really looking for. You're looking for a rookie to set yourself apart, to give you that next level juice. And if he does do that, which we already know he can, we've seen that. Yeah. I'm sign me up for that because everybody's going to be watching this week.
It's always interesting to see these guys that have the best offensive lines, right? And how they perform, you know, when they get to the NFL because you have so much time. Like Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, their offensive lines were exponentially better than the defensive lines that they were going against. Tua is the same example of that, right? Where it's always been like Tua and Burrow had more weapons than anybody, and they had great offensive lines. And usually you see these guys kind of come back down to earth a la all the USC quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. Because they just had better weapons than everybody else. They were just better.
But Miami
It'll be fascinating to see kind of, you know, we've seen the two other guys that have had that succeed, and Tua, he's going to be the third guy. He's not depleted in the weapons department whatsoever with this Dolphins.
He's got a lot of time. He doesn't have to face his big time divisional rivals till the end of December. He doesn't have to face the Patriots till December. The Patriots might either be tanking by then. Cam Newton might be hurt. We don't know what the Patriots are going to be doing towards the end. We certainly know don't. We've seen Buffalo have two hiccups. And they look back to, you know, just being a solid team, but not a great team. They don't face them till the end of the season. Tua's got some chances here. He's got the Rams, Cardinals, Chargers, Broncos. Is that and Jets and Bengals? Does that sound intimidating? He doesn't play the Chiefs till December 13th.
Here's a question.
There is a run of teams that they could, and they're sitting at 3-3, right behind one game back in the division. Oh, they got to like the way they sit.
Here's the question, though: is it actually a good thing that you don't see the Patriots early and you get them late?
Yeah.
Because then Belichick gets a ton of tape on you to kind of get a book on you.
Well, previous times or previous history will tell you that Bill Belichick, with Tom Brady or without Tom Brady, I can't tell you how long it's been because no one's ever seen it. No one really around that covers football, that understands football now, can remember what 1999 and 2000 looked like. And we certainly are seeing what it is post-Tom Brady right now. 2-3, COVID. Okay, all right, COVID caused a hiccup. I understand that. But here we are. We now get it. When's the last time the Patriots have been below 500?
2002.
Okay. So, I don't know. I don't know what else to tell you on
no,
that.
No, I'm just talking about getting like a game plan for him and not having a bunch of film on, not offensively what the Patriots are going to do, but defensively. Right. Bill Belichick with more opportunities to see you.
So he'll like game plan, no question. They'll be ready for him. Now, will they have enough talent to do it? If there's a push, I'm hoping that the AFC East becomes super interesting. I wasn't sold on the Bills running away with this thing. I wasn't sold on the Bills just running away from it. I thought the Patriots are going to win the division after the way they started. And now it's like, all right, everybody's coming back to earth a little bit.
Follow the show, except for the Dolphins. They're going to the moon, baby. To the moon.
This one says, if you're Miami, you hope that Tua plays well and gets some good experience, but not good enough to lead you to a lot of wins in order to ensure you still have another year of
draft picks. Oh, I say screw that.
They already have good draft picks.
You got the Texans pick.
Yeah.
You're fine.
You already got good draft.
You could win every game. You'll be okay.
You've already won three games.
Yeah. You'll be all right. This is going to be if they go 9-7, they'll be through the roof because they'll have a top five pick in whatever the Texans are doing. You
know, every year we see this this tanking mentality. It would suck more when you have you're a good coach, good team. You're playing well. I always use the Seahawks, for example, in that 2011 season when you drafted in 2012 season. That was a really good year for those guys. They built, and then the 13, then all they did was just stomp their way through, started playing well. You don't just start being average. You want to win games. If they can finish 9-7, it'd be a really good year. 9-7, 8-8, somewhere in there for the Dolphins, get a couple picks. If they can win the division, sneak into the playoffs maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, criminy, they went to the playoffs with Oregon State's quarterback.
Matt Moore. Yeah. And this is going to be here's an interesting side note to look at in all of this too is, since you have Houston's number one pick the next couple of years, you put Tua in now and you see what you got with him. And if you don't like him, you're not going to be afraid to move on.
Absolutely,
because you'll have the draft capital to move up and get the number one pick if you want it.
Right,
because you'll have two high picks.
I hope he plays well. The NFL needs more exciting young talent like him. I hope he does well.
Breaking news on The Fan is brought to you by Pennzoil. Motor oils made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil. All right, World Series picks next. Dusty and Cam on The Fan. Want to take a stab at how much money Ryan Fitzpatrick's made in his career?
Let's see, 17 years. I'm going to say 125.
No.
Not that much?
Uh-uh.
More?
Lower.
Oh, okay.
Lower,
all right.
Lower,
well,
lower.
That's, I mean, yeah, probably a lot lower. I forgot about that Jets holdout he wanted, and they ended up lowballing him, and yeah.
I am here to tell you, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he ranks 65th all time in NFL career earnings.
Okay.
Ever. $71.541 million. $74.541 million.
It's a good career. A great career.
16 years. Yeah, not bad for the 250th pick of the 2005 NFL draft out of Howard.
I was part of his very first win, overtime win in Houston, 2005. Yeah. Loved every second of it.
He has thrown.
Still going.
He has a career, and this is amazing. Like what just being a good dude and being smart will get you. Mm. He is nearly 30 games under 500 as a career starter. Mm. Before this season, by the way, he was 31 games under 500. He was 58-86-1. He has thrown for 34,000 yards, 61% of his passes he's completed, thrown 220 pass touchdowns, rushed for 21, and thrown 168 interceptions.
I would rank him top five backup quarterbacks all time. Like, if there was a Hall of Fame for backup quarterback, all-time backup quarterbacks that could stand in, or in game-managing quarterbacks of all time, I would put him in his top five. Game-managing quarterbacks all time.
He averages 10.5 picks per season.
Yeah.
As a backup.
Yeah. He's better than Case Keenum. He's better than, the ultimate backups. When I think ultimate backups,
Nick
I think
Foles?
Of... No. You got to play a long time. You got to play for multiple teams. You got to play a long time. Nick Foles is always
Foles
hurt.
Nick Foles played for multiple teams.
He had a Super Bowl.
Time?
Multiple teams, long time. He hasn't played 17 years.
No.
You got to play. We're talking
17 years.
We're talking like Steve DeBerg kind of backup. So we guys that play
Jim
forever.
Jim Sorgi.
Yeah, Gus Frerotte.
No, Jim Sorgi didn't even play that long. He was just Peyton and Eli's backup.
Yeah. Long time.
Mm.
I'm seeing on Twitter that we're going to get Tua versus Herbert November 15th.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that game got bumped around. It was supposed to be this week or maybe next week, and that was one of the games I was done in the shuffle for the Patriots and Titans scheduling conflicts. Yeah, he's played for a bunch of teams, man, and of these 16 years, if you look at it, You played with him in St. Louis?
I just said I was part of his
first win.
The overtime game in Houston was an epic game. It was awesome.
What year was that?
2005.
Even know you were talking about... I thought you were talking about him playing in Houston, which he also did.
No, he was the starting quarterback for that game. His very first win as a quarterback came in an overtime game versus Houston. We played at Energy Stadium. It was an incredible football game.
Well, Football Reference is lying. It says he went 0-3 his rookie year.
Well, they're idiots.
Yeah, you were there.
I was on the field for that game.
Yeah. Well, that's stupid. That's why I said, wait, what? It says he was 0-3 that year.
So former Duck, Jonathan Stewart, I think joking around on Twitter, but might have a point here. Trade alert, Fitzpatrick to the Cowboys.
Oh.
Why wouldn't you maybe make that move?
Well, now we're in the offseason. No, they're not going to give him up now. There's
probably
no way
not.
They're not doing that now.
It says here on Football Reference, he was 0-3, but then you click on it. It says he started against the Houston Texans, and you guys won 33-27.
Yeah, no.
Why is that?
Because
they're
don't
liars.
This is another example of stop your stupid internet searches, people. Not you, Dusty.
Yeah, no.
But stop your stupid trusting internet sites and acting like that is real. I'm giving you full human stats. This is the man stats
it says
here.
Jamie Martin also played.
Yeah. We won that game, and it was an incredible. He threw a quick screen to, I think it was Isaac. Was it Isaac? Or maybe it was Kevin Curtis. And we won the game in overtime. This is incredible.
You did not have any catches in that game.
No.
One texter telling us we need to have a backup quarterback of the year award and name it after Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Another one asking, does he have a top five beard in sports history?
Oh, yeah, no question. Who's a better beard?
James Harden?
In football. In football.
I was just going to say Brett Kiesel's the only guy that comes to mind.
Yeah, Brett Kiesel's the only other beard I think
of. A lot
of
football beardsy guys.
Now, Ben Roethlisberger had a good one, but he ripped off Fitzpatrick's.
Well, the chin strap seems like it would make it more
difficult. It's a little agitating. You know, and Julian Edelman let one go for a while there, too.
No, it's Ryan Fitzpatrick in the NFL. He and Brett Kiesel are the two beard guys that I think of in the NFL. I mean, there's really no, because of the chin strap, it's a very hard thing to do. Is to pull off a beard, and he just looks like he rolled off a mountain.
Right.
Hey, what are we doing here for our World Series picks? Who do you got? I got Dodgers in six. I'm going Dodgers in six. This is the year. This one is for my dad, Dodger fan, Andy.
I think we get seven games. So I think we get seven games, and hopefully I'm picking Dodgers in seven.
That was going to be my pick as well. I think that they have the bats to do it, but you know we've obviously seen their pitching falter. I think this thing's going seven. I really don't know who's winning it, but I'll roll with the Dodgers.
Come on, Dodgers. Whoa, Giants fan rooting for the Dodgers.
Might have a little financial interest too.
Whoa, no. Ryan.
I win $50 if they win the World Series.
Dude, Rye Guy from the Bay would be so upset at you, bro.
It's all right. We've got three in 5 years.
All right. Up next, we got the Herd with Colin Cowherd, 9 to noon, noon to 3, Dirt and Sprague, 3 to 7, Primetime with Isaac and Souk. Tomorrow, Cam's definitive, non-negotiable power rankings of the National Football League will be on this show at 7:30 a.m. So be with us from 6 to 9. Enjoy the Herd with Colin Cowherd. This has been Dusty and Cam on the Fan.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!